Dictionary.com selected hallucinate as its 2023 word of the year, pointing its emergent AI context meaning to produce false information and present it as fact. My guest today, Dan Gretsch, has been in the thick of AI. My listeners here on the Dadpreneur podcast know I've been talking about AI for the past year. We, on our AI app that builds blogs, we have now more than 15,000 members from all over the world. We have produced more than 50 podcasts around AI with the AI equation. There's not enough time in a day to keep up with what's going on in AI. It's so exciting for marketing, productivity, SEO, all the stuff that we talk about here. I'm really excited for it as it pertains to education. However, we're living through a period of uncertainty. AI is not going to go away. And I think we don't know what the standards are, but Dan is going to talk to us about that because he went to Capitol Hill and he, you know, sat before obviously our officials to talk about this. And we've seen big names like Elon Musk and Sundar Pichai and Elon Musk. I mean, like all these people that have been there talking about it, but I don't trust them. And I don't trust them because social media has been around for over a decade. In Section 230, between the government and the tech companies, they've done squat. So I'd rather talk to the real people like Dan, who is in the forefront and talking to companies and know about what's going on. So Dan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's awesome to be here.
So well, first, for our audience that doesn't know Dan, if they don't know Dan, he's been on the podcast here before. Tell us a little bit about you and BizHack.
Yeah. Well, I think the best way to tell them about me is to tell them about us, right? So you and I are both marketing practitioners who, for some reason, just feel compelled to give back. And the way that we tend to give back is through training others. And you and I are both teachers at heart. I run a fractional CMO or fractional chief marketing officer company. We run a training academy. We do a ton of free and paid training around topics like lead gen, thought leadership, business storytelling, and most recently AI for marketing and sales. And, you know, Alex, you and I know each other because you were the lead instructor of one of my courses, The Digital Marketer's Edge. It's our signature course on AI-powered Facebook and Instagram advertising. And Meta doesn't get the press, but it is spending billions of dollars on AI tools, many of which are built into its Meta Business Suite. And so we've had to revamp entirely the curriculum of that course to incorporate AI into it. So you are an amazing lead instructor. You don't actually know this, but I'm going to be part of the next class of the JMI, Jim Moran Institute's Small Business Executive Program.
Fantastic.
And you're one of the instructors there for many years. So I'm going to be your student. It's going to, you know, the script will flip and I'm going to be your student soon.
There you go. Well, I've learned a lot from you and I really do respect you, not only as a marketer, but entrepreneur, everything that you do, everything that you've built around BizHack and the coaches, the businesses that you attract. I can't say enough. So again, really want to talk about AI today and your experience because you've been in the forefront, definitely. You're not just one of these marketers who are talking about it as a way of making more money. You really want to give back. So tell us what your experience has been and then also like what happened up there in Capitol Hill.
Yeah. So let me just talk about a little bit about the work I've been doing and then we can talk about Capitol Hill. So the work I've been doing is, so, you know, November 30th, for those of us in the industry, was like a watershed moment. That was the day, November 30th, 2022, mm-hmm. was the day that ChatGPT was released. And, you know, those of us who saw the news started playing with it, and we were astounded. I call this your AI moment. So I'll tell you my AI moment, and I'd love to hear yours. So my AI moment was I was sitting in bed one night, and I'd been reading all these articles in the, you know, trade publications and a little bit in the mass media about this tool that was on fire. And so I logged into ChatGPT on my phone. It was late at night. My whole family was already asleep. And I started to play with it. And at first, you know, I tried to fool it like everybody does. And then I actually, you know, took the cut and paste of the summary of a book I had written, and I threw it in there. And then I started to just ask it questions about the book. And all I was doing was off of like maybe 1,000-word book summary. And I started to like really poke around in it. So the book was about something called the lead building system. You know the lead building system because that's what you taught when you were a lead instructor of one of my courses. And the lead building system is a systematic process for marketing. It's a simplified process for marketing. You have the foundation is your business story, and then you have the six pillars, the campaign objective, target audience, the irresistible offer, the thumb-stopping video, the compelling message, and the customer journey. And those six elements really do encompass everything you need to know about lead gen. So I threw that description in there, talked about each of the pillars, and then I started to query the book. So that one of the first queries ChatGPT, and one of the first questions I asked is, what is the roof? I had never actually thought to ask this question. I had never defined the roof of the lead building system. The lead building system was like more of like the lead building framework. It had like, you know, like a skeleton of a foundation and four pillars, but there was nothing else. There were no windows, there were no floors, there was no walls, and there was no roof. So I said, what was the roof? And they're like, well, the roof is the brand. I'm like, oh, I'm like, what do you mean? And they said, well, the brand protects you, right? And it allows you to market. And so it provides protection and it kind of, you know, I'm like, oh my God, that's actually smart. And in fact, that's right. Like I never thought of that. And then I'm like, well, what are the windows? And they're like, well, the windows are the channels, right? They're the ways that you communicate with. I'm like, oh my God, well, what are the steps? And we're like, well, you know, the stairs, you know, are the, you know, the SOPs and the process that you, I'm like, oh my God, dude, I started to have a moment where it's like, I cannot believe this. It felt like a really smart PhD research assistant. And you're having this generative conversation. Anyway, 3 a.m, bleary eyed, I fall asleep and my life has been just different ever since. Because I realized this is by far the most exciting tool I've ever worked with. Not as a marketer, as a human being.
Right.
And this is a once in a generation tool. And this is GPT 3.5. Right. And this was the very early version of ChatGPT, which was, you know, rudimentary. I remember when Twitter came out and I was a professional journalist at the time, working at the NPR's marketplace as a foreign correspondent. And I was like, I don't understand it. And you know, I had someone explain it to me. I was like, microblogs. I'm like, I don't get it. And then they showed me the app and they walked me through it, and I still didn't get it. And for like 6 months, I was like on the app tweeting and didn't get it. And to some extent, I still don't get it. Whereas with ChatGPT, the realization and recognition of the power of the tool was so immediate and so profound. And then I also, you know, with like Twitter and social media in general, I'm like, well, this seems to take a lot of time. Yeah. And every time I go on it, I kind of feel worse, you know, like I feel like a lot of FOMO and like, why didn't I get invited to that party? And I feel compelled, like I publish 5 to 6 stories a week. That's enough. Like, do I have to tweet too? So I was always like resistant to social media, and it never really became a, you know, I recognize its power. I teach classes in it, but ChatGPT spoke to me in a different way. I have a master's in fine arts. I have a writing degree basically. And the word hallucination where you started, what beautiful language to describe making shit up. Right. And LLM or large language model, it is a predictive language machine. And there are so many examples of just beautiful language. You know, one of the best use cases for ChatGPT is to write poetry, you know, to write songs. So anyway, what was your AI moment, Alex? When was the moment when your life was, there was a before and an after?
Yeah, I'll tell you that, but piggybacking on what you were just saying, Dan, because I really want to, for our listeners and probably most people who have not spent enough time exploring any of the AI tools that are out there, you don't have to do ChatGPT. Obviously, there's Bard, there's many others. But the thing is, I say, it reminds me of when I go to a conference. When you go to a conference and you're talking to thousands of people, networking, you're going into booths, you're sitting up there listening to thought leaders that, you know, presumably are not hallucinating. Hopefully they're not making shit up, or maybe they are. So this is what I tell people right now who are resisting. I call them the resistors. These are the same people who are like, SEO doesn't exist. Social media sucks. They just, they don't want to participate, but they want their business to grow. And they're saying, these tools can help other people grow, but I'm not going to participate. And I'm definitely not doing this AI thing, Alex. I don't care what you tell me. And I'm like, look, the AI at this point is a lot like human beings. When you go to that conference and you have conversations with people, you know that everyone is, you know, sort of making their stories more colorful because they want to do business with you. The guy who's up on stage, he's exaggerating things a little bit, right? Stand-up comics do that. You go find out that, Joe Coy is telling a story on stage, but maybe only like 10% of it actually happened. The rest is just imagination and creativity. Well, AI is a lot the same. And so there is a line between hallucination and reality that I think people have to understand that it's no different than human beings. People make shit up all the time. And sometimes you don't know, which is why you know more than anyone the value of journalism and making sure that the sources are accurate, that all of that good stuff. Now, my AI moment, Dan, for me was I also started using it in December of last year. So it's been a year now. And immediately I found a co-founder to build this app that is powered by ChatGPT. Yeah. So the business side was easy. It was like, yes, we're going to build an app that does blogging and SEO. And as I said, now we have over 15,000 members around the world. And that's been great. But the use cases for me, Dan, that took me to another level, and as you said, changed my life, was the use case for education. So we started using Khan Academy's KhanMigo. Blew my mind because, you know, you think in education, all the kids who will not have the opportunity to have tutoring, for example, or teachers who don't have time to grade papers. And the AI is doing all that for them. And then I'll take it a step further is my son, my 13-year-old, who started to songwrite and rap. He wants to be a rapper. So he started doing this a little bit over a year ago, Dan. And his writing is phenomenal. I'm talking like poetic, really amazing, super technical. And I started playing with ChatGPT and doing my own stuff just to see, like, compare his to ChatGPT's. And I was blown away. And of course, Google also has a few tools that are for music that have blown me away as well. So I've explored enough to know that whether it's education, business, healthcare, Dan, I've had so many AI moments that I'm definitely drinking the Kool-Aid. And more importantly, I have concrete examples of where we've been able to really help clients take their business to the next level without spending an extra dime. And that's exciting. So,
you know, I want to piggyback on that last point, which is, so first you have your own AI moment, and then you start to help others have theirs. And as an educator, as a person who loves helping others, who does this in order to help others, that's been the most gratifying part. So some of the examples of how I've been using it in my personal life. So I tell interactive bedtime stories with my 4-year-old son. And so I'll say, okay, his name's Henry. Henry, who do you want in this story? And he'll say, Sophia and Alexander H. I'm like, okay, Sophia and Alexander H. And what do you guys want to do? He said, we want to play with transport trucks. And then, and what prize do you want to get at the end? He's like, we want to drink milk. Okay. So I'm like, okay, ChatGPT. And I load it in and it's called like Henry's Milky Adventure. And then it writes the story and I read it to him. It's awesome. So that's one example. We've had several of our business owners have actually done children's books, combining the, you know, one of my favorite is a man from Pakistan whose son he works in a pharmaceutical company, and his 7-year-old daughter has a pet goat named Ronaldo, named after the soccer player. So she loves this pet goat. I love this story, by the way. So she loves this pet goat. And so she wants to write a Harry Potter inspired story of the pet goat. And so he like gets the whole book, you know, children's book written. And then he uses, it was then Midjourney, although I think DALL-E 3 now is better. He uses Midjourney to do the illustrations.
Okay.
And then he uses DID, which is a plugin on Canva, to do the voiceover. So he creates a Kindle book, a children's book. Now they're on to, I think, edition 3 or 4 of, you know, this pet goat. It's called, like, Henry Higgins or something. It's, you know, it's not called Ronaldo, but it's like, just so exciting. And then when I showed that example to my students, one of the students went and started making children's books. And a lot of these were books that she had already dreamed about, you know, conceived of, but had never made the time to write. And in one long weekend could finish a book. So that's, you know, and have an illustrator that she couldn't have otherwise afforded. Illustrations are really good in ChatGPT because anything photorealistic is a little weird. It's got that uncanny valley, you know, freakiness to it, but things that are illustrated are great. So I did a math circle with my daughter's school. A math circle is just a after school activity to make math fun. A little bit of a cautionary tale on this one, actually. So I used it to create a logo. The words were kind of funky. So I then used Canva Magic Eraser, which, you know, AI, by the way, Canva has done such a beautiful job with AI. It's become a requirement of my students to get ChatGPT Plus and Canva Pro, because it's just such a powerful tool for so little money. So we like used Magic Eraser, fixed up the image. And then they all wanted to be in teams, right? They're very competitive fifth graders. So we created logos for each team, and like the logos were beautiful. And every single one of those logos, you know, the whole thing took me about 5 minutes to just, I'm like, create five more, you know? So it was sort of like Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw. So we created logos. Everybody was had a team. The part where we had to be careful is I asked it to create some math problems for me to teach, and it hallucinated. It made up math problems that were, where the solutions were incorrect. And so I'm holding up right now a textbook. I definitely recommend, you know, some of the old fashioned textbook with actual proven problems, because it was crazy. ChatGPT created very confident sounding problems. And then I sat there in front of the classroom and tried to solve them and realized they were insoluble. They were mistakes. Absolutely. And then actually when I went back to ChatGPT and I said, are you sure about that solution? And they apologized and they said, no, they had gotten it wrong. So it's really interesting. But those personal use cases, you know, planning a trip and the itinerary, calculating the mileage and how much gas you would need if you're in a Tesla, when you're going to need to recharge and where, like all those like crunching of numbers. We had a commercial kitchen that was doing, like, they wanted to create 100 of a certain kind of food, and how much raw material, what would the recipe be, and how much would the shopping list be? Like, those types of use cases are just breathtaking, and they're low stakes, and they just show you the capacity of the program. And then one last thing I'll mention is I've been doing a lot of AI for seniors, and seniors are very interested in legacy. And so I go to these old age homes and I've been partnering with the local PBS station, and we're helping seniors, you know, use this tool to research their family tree or to capture their legacy for future generations.
Oh, that's so cool. That's really interesting. I love all the use cases that you shared with us, Dan, because I think people struggle. They're intimidated by electron, you know, just the whole digital world. And I mentioned at the top of the podcast, Section 230, I've talked about it like 100 times here in the podcast over the years. And I think it is the reason most people are either intimidated or don't trust this world of AI is because of how terribly wrong both the same tech companies who are now at the forefront of AI got it, as well as the government. And they all admitted, right? Like, if you go back to all the hearings that they've had, they all look at each other and go, yeah, we not only got it wrong, we still haven't fixed it, right? Mental health as an issue, cyberbullying, all the bad stuff that continues to happen on Instagram, TikTok. And so it's not like these aren't phantom things. These are things that are happening still. And so I think that part of the reason why people are standoffish still, sitting on the sidelines and not as excited as you are or I am, is because they just don't trust it. So how do we get around that?
Yeah, that's exactly what I came to Capitol Hill with. As I said, we have an incredible cautionary tale, which is social media. And we have seen the excesses of private enterprise with a profit motive without any boundaries. The harm that Mark Zuckerberg and co. have done at Facebook through their all-out pursuit of their North Star of increased monthly users has been catastrophic. And shame on Congress for never to this day having legislated it. There is no U.S. regulation of social media.
Yeah.
And so I came to Capitol Hill to say, you screwed the pooch, guys. You screwed this up. And look at what's happened. Look at what the mess of our presidential elections you've made. Look at the people who've died overseas because of this. Look at the way it's being used to spread misinformation, disinformation, and hate. And you have a certain amount of responsibility for allowing them to run amok. You have an opportunity to get ahead of AI. And the Biden administration put out some guidance on this. But the problem was, how much small business input was in that guidance? Zero.
Yeah.
Zero. Unacceptable. This is the most powerful tool for small business productivity and growth in a generation.
I agree.
How can you not have us at the table? We are half the economy and 80% of the jobs. How can we not have a seat? Why is it only the big five of tech that get to have say in what the regulation is? Because guess what? What are they going to do? We know that they're going to make it in their favor. They're because the legislators don't know the technology. So it's basically the fox in the hen house. There's no way for a business of any size smaller than $1 trillion to develop this technology.
Mm-hmm.
The LLMs are so expensive to build and run that, like, there is no ChatGPT without Microsoft.
Right.
Period. There is no DeepMind if it's not acquired by Google. Period. These are not technologies that can be built by normal size businesses. Countries couldn't afford to do this. You know, China and India are really the only major players in this because they're the only ones who can afford to do it. So yet the tool is being used every day by small businesses. A quarter of small businesses in the U.S., according to a survey that I saw by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, use ChatGPT on a weekly basis or an AI tool like ChatGPT on a weekly basis. The companies that I work with, so we've done masterclasses, which are like kind of one-off, you know, 90-minute to two-hour training sessions. We have an online course that we sell. And then probably the most exciting thing that you're not aware of is I just finished a two-month boot camp with 36 businesses from downtown Miami on how to use ChatGPT. And it was awesome. The creativity was breathtaking. We had one person created an RFP in 2 days that got them a $1 million contract.
Wow.
They said that they could never have written that quickly if not for ChatGPT. They would have just had to pass on it. I personally used it to save more than $30,000 in translation costs when I was translating one of my courses into Spanish and Creole. Mm-hmm. Now, we still engaged human beings to help with the editing of the transcripts to make sure they're accurate and the voicing of them, because it's just, you can't use AI voices for that length. At least where the technology was half a year ago when I did this. Now the AI voice technology is so much more advanced in the last year that Spotify is now translating all of Dax Shepard's podcasts into Spanish using a voice that sounds like his, an AI voice that sounds like his. So, I'm always scared of absolutes when it comes to the limits of AI, because the speed of technological change is breathtaking. The accuracy of transcriptions, it used to be about 50% 2 years ago, and now it's closer to 90% accurate. The facial recognition, 10 years ago, you could not recognize a face. Now, every phone has facial recognition to unlock it and facial recognition in the photos to organize photos by people. That was not possible technologically just a decade ago. You know, we have self-driving cars that have logged billions of miles. It's really not a matter of solving the issue. It's a matter of scaling it and making sure people feel safe doing it. It's like, and this is the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg. This is the beginning. This is mainframe computer stuff. right? Like computers in your hand that you walk around with, that's where AI is going to be in 10 or 20 years. And God knows what the world's going to look like then. So super exciting. And I went to Congress and I said, you know, two things. Number one, make sure we have a seat at the table when this is regulated, that small business advocates, small business experts, so that you don't regulate it out of usefulness. Mm-hmm. Because it's a very useful tool, but it's also can be used, as a tool for disinformation and evil in the wrong hands. And we need to create guardrails. You know, we also don't want the robots taking over and pressing, you know, the nuclear button. So that was message one. And then message two is that there's no way on earth that most of the 50% of the economy that's small business can actually afford the training they need for this.
Right.
And so it needs to be government subsidized. And we need to continue to invest in getting our workforce future ready.
Well, I am, for one, really excited about what the future of AI brings. And I agree with you. It feels like very 1996, 1997 with the internet, or, you know, early days, 2005, six with smartphones. You remember those days. And I've always been a quick adopter, but I've always been super skeptical, Dan, of anything. So while I'm an early adopter, I'm usually like, let me find like, where are the holes here? Where is the problem with security, privacy? And I'm very skeptical, but with this, I think if you're using it for good, there's just the sky's the limit, and it's really the beginning. I think the challenge though will be that will the companies that are at the forefront, like you said, the 5-6 that are leading the charge with no oversight right now, will they do the right thing, or will Congress, who doesn't allow, or the senators, like I heard Senator Blumenthal speaking about this, and he was quite, you know, I'm sure he was reading from a teleprompter and probably someone wrote the script, but he seemed to have a better understanding than most of the other senators who were like, well, this is great. It sounds fantastic. While the CEOs were just talking in circles. And then you hear somebody like Jeffrey Hinton, you know, speak about it and talk about it could be a doomsday with the bots taking over.
Yeah. Jeffrey Hinton's one of the grandfathers of AI. He used to run Google's lab and he quit in protest of the way that Google is using the technology in an irresponsible way. And then this CEO ouster that lasted a weekend of Sam Altman, was 100% about the sort of reckless speed with which Sam is pushing this technology out.
Yeah.
And so the Pandora's box, unfortunately, was opened. So that at the same time that I'm sitting in my bed, you know, having this aha moment with AI, every major tech company in the world, you know, HubSpot, Slack, the big guys, are all starting to put all their resources into accelerating this technology. And the safeguard, like a lot of this stuff was invented by Google. So the foundation of ChatGPT is something called transformer technology. That's the T in GPT. Google scientists invented that, and they put it out in the public because that's what researchers do. They published about the transformer technology, and that really ushered in the age of ChatGPT. So Google has been an early player in all of this, and everybody is like, oh, Google's on the fence, Google's on the rocks. Like, dude, Google was slow playing this until ChatGPT forced their hand. OpenAI and Microsoft forced their hand. And so like Microsoft's doing a little happy dance, but I think Gemini, I don't think we know fully yet. I personally don't fully know yet that the new LLM they released called Gemini, which is now going to be powering Google Bard. Google says it's a more powerful model than GPT-4. And I tend to believe them. So I can't wait to like really dig in over the holidays into Gemini and see what Google's come up with, because they have always been on the forefront of this. And then Meta is very active in the space. Amazon just announced a training initiative on AI that's aiming to train 2 million people for free on how to use AI tools. And they're looking at it as a talent pipeline. In other words, they know they're going to need these engineers, so they want to train them up. You know, Microsoft obviously is at the very forefront, and Apple you know, Apple has been a laggard in this space. Siri is the worst AI voice assistant ever. And there's actually very good reason for it. It was built improperly. Like the way they built the code base didn't allow it to get be smart and get updated. But, you know, Apple is going to figure this out late and then be the best, as they do with everything. You know, they weren't the first iPhone maker, but they were the best iPhone maker. So, you know, what's to come? Plus, it's not even talking about, you know, Canva and Slack and HubSpot, which are building these tools, you know, into your everyday. I think the big change from 2023 to 2024 is AI has not yet been built into our common tools so that it's still more like a cut and paste. Mm-hmm. But generatively written emails built into Gmail, generatively written posts built into LinkedIn, generatively written documents, you know, written into, you know, built into Google, you know, Word and Google Docs. Like that's where we're headed, is a more convenient user experience as well as more powerful language models. And then, I don't know, maybe 2024 will also be the year when general intelligence, artificial general intelligence, or AGI actually emerges. And that is the real, like, robots take over the world moment that everybody is so afraid of. Nobody is afraid of an LLM that creates pretty poetry. That's not what they're afraid of. What they're afraid of is the thing that comes after that, which is artificial general intelligence, which can do a variety of complex tasks like a human. And we don't know the capabilities of an AGI. And the big fear is, AI right now is a black box. They don't know why it produces what it produces. They know the algorithm, but they don't know the actual process inside of the algorithm. So a great example of this is ChatGPT speaks 95 plus natural languages, and it can code in multiple languages. They did not train it to do that. It figured that out on its own.
Right.
And they don't know how it did it. That's the thing that scares people, is that lack of understanding of the black box of how. There's a meme called the Shigaleth, which is an H.P. Lovecraft creature. And the Shigaleth wears a human face, but it's this giant blobby monster, and it has a human face. That's what they fear ChatGPT is. It's a Shigaleth with a human face. And that's the doomsday scenario. What percentage, you know, this is one of the parlor games that AI scientists have, which is, what's your P-doom, your probability of doom or probability of human extinction due to AI? What's your P-doom, Alex? What percentage chance do you think there is that humanity will be destroyed by AI?
It really, I think, depends on, it's almost like nuclear weapons. I think that's really what it comes down to, because it won't have like the tech companies, the billionaires, the people who are pulling the strings. They're going to want to make sure that, you know, we exist, continue to thrive. And then as far as the governments, I think the US, they want to be the superpower, continue to. And then you've got, of course, China, Russia, you've got others. But I really just fear that piece of it, that if one, you know, bad player out there, you know, you see what's happening in the Middle East and in Russia with Ukraine, like there's a lot of bad stuff happening right there. So, I liken it to just like nuclear weapons, you know, because you're still going to have a lot of people who don't want to depend on the government, the grid, whether it's for food, healthcare, education, and so on. So there's, if you go to middle America, they're not talking about AI, believe me. They could care less. There, a lot of those people aren't even on social media. It's mostly the coastal cities.
Let alone Brazil.
Yeah.
Let alone Latin America. I've started to do AI in Spanish. Hablo español perfectamente. Y fui a Puerto Rico. I went to Puerto Rico and I was presenting. And this is the U.S. now, but I was just shocked at how behind they were in terms of understanding and how elevated their fear was. And I also do talks across Latin America and find something similar. I don't know if you found that in Brazil.
I did. I was just there in October. You know, it's the same thing. I've talked to a lot of guys that are in the startup world and tech, and yes, they're adopting it. But, you know, if you go out, like we had a bunch of get togethers and parties, like no one is talking about the stuff. They're like, whatever. I have my job. I'm happy with what I'm doing. And AI, yeah, whatever. I don't know. So I think to your point, we'll see when we reach AGI, what happens. But clearly there's gonna be a need for a global organization like the UN that is, you know, sort of getting an agreement from all these countries to say, like, hey, we're gonna make sure that we don't allow a bad actor to get a hold of this and use it like a nuclear weapon of sorts, right? So there's a lot of doomsday scenarios, but I'm more optimistic about it. I'll just tell you that.
Yeah. So if you had to give a number, what is your P-doom percentage? What percentage chance do the robots take over and press the nuclear button?
I'm going to put it at 20%.
Nice. Whoa. 20. I put it, that's 1 in 5. I put it at 5%, 1 in 20. I believe in humanity, and I believe that this is going to be similar to nuclear technology. I think that analogy is perfect. It's actually a bit of a cautionary analogy as well, because the fear of nuclear war and nuclear, you know, Chernobyl type events has led nuclear power to not really be developed fully. And that's a shame, right? Like, we could have solved our energy issues if we had been able to harness that technology. It's a tool. Just like nuclear fission is a tool, generative AI is a tool, and it can be used for good or evil, depending on whose hands it's in. And I hope there's a cautionary tale for the world in that, in nuclear as well, because we do need to protect against the real dangers of AI. But golly, I hope we don't curtail the positive potential like we did with nuclear. So, well, thank you. I have one little memento that I want to share with you.
I was going to ask you, you've given us all these insights, and how are you going to close today on a high note? And I always know that you do. So tell us.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm a storyteller. I didn't get an MFA for nothing. So for the listening audience, I'm holding a baseball right now.
Okay.
And that baseball has a signature on it.
Peter?
And that it's Roger Williams.
Okay.
Number 29. Roger Williams is the chairman of the House Committee on Small Business. He's a representative from Texas.
Okay.
And he's a former professional baseball player. And so I found out about him being a performer pro in the Atlanta Braves. He was an outfielder in the Atlanta Braves Farm League, and then he was a coach. I don't think he ever made it to the majors, but he then had a very successful coaching career at Texas Christian University, one of the top baseball programs in college baseball, and he's in the Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame. So he's, you know, baseball royalty. So when I found out I'm a former baseball player. I was a catcher, captain of my high school baseball team, not good enough to play in college. But a lover of baseball, when I grew up in Philadelphia. So I brought a baseball and a Sharpie for him to sign it. So I handed it to him. He's a 70-year-old man. I hand him the baseball. He loves talking about his baseball career. And he's like, would you like me to sign the sweet spot? And I'm like, the sweet spot? He's like, yeah, the sweet spot. It's the part of the ball where the laces are the closest.
Okay.
And if you ever hit a ball in the sweet spot, it goes farther. I actually didn't know that. I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, learn like, something new every day. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, and I played baseball for years. And he's like, you know, usually only the greats sign the sweet spot, Babe Ruth and Hank Aaron. And I said, well, Chairman Williams, in all due respect, you are one of the greats. And so he signed it right in the sweet spot.
Nice.
So I'm very blessed to have had that experience. It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I feel really honored to be able to go up in Congress and represent South Florida and represent all the small business owners that I've worked with, to represent you, Alex, and all that you're doing for our community.
Well, they were lucky to have you, because I really mean it. I mean, in the world of business and people who are really champions of small businesses, I've had the pleasure of working with you, BizHack, and pretty much anyone that's around BizHack, there's just this this energy that you've cultivated. There's a culture, and there's no denying it. So for our listeners who don't know about BizHack, go get to know BizHack, go get to know Dan. And Dan, before we close out today's podcast, for those who are listening, because I know there's so many that have written to me in the past year, who I've even offered our app at no cost. I said, you need to try this out. If you don't try ChatGPT, at least try this, because it'll help you create content. And they said, I don't want it. So I know from our listeners, there are way too many of them that are sitting on the sidelines. Why get into AI, and what are the first steps, in your opinion, for those small business owners?
Yeah. Why get into AI? I'll start with a fear-based reason. There's a lot of fear about job displacement, about it from AI, you know, entry-level coding, mm-hmm. copywriters. These are legitimate fears. Let me speak directly to you, those of you who are not doing AI. AI isn't going to take your job, but someone who knows how to use AI will. Period. Mm-hmm. If you're a business owner, AI is not going to replace your sales process, but your competitor is going to use AI to take money out of your pocket. And I'm not exaggerating. This is happening today. It is the most powerful productivity tool in a generation. It is on par, according to Bill Gates, with the invention of the computer. This is not an optional thing. And if you don't hop aboard the train, it's going to run you over, period. So that's the fear-based reason. Now, the exciting reason is if you start to use this tool, you can save, you can do 1,000x. Actually, I call it 10,000x. You can do more, 10 times more, 10 times better, 10 times faster, and 10 times new things. 10,000x. So you can do more, better, faster, absolutely. But you can also do things that you could never have done before. And this is what my students are teaching me. They don't have a graphic designer on staff. Now they do. They don't have a way to acquire imagery. Now they do. You know, so there are things that they could do now that they couldn't do before. So 10 times more, 10 times better, 10 times faster, 10 times new. 10,000x. That's the opportunity. And how to get started? Get started with your kids. Get started with your grandparents or your parents. Like, do something fun. Do something low stakes. Do something that will be meaningful to you. I used it to write a limerick for Father's Day about how I'm kind of farty. So it was a farty limerick. It was super fun. Just say, write a limerick to Dan for Father's Day about his flatulence. And it will write this beautiful. You know what I mean? Like, just do that.
I got you, man.
Yeah, man. And then the last piece is, if you really are scared of this, keep listening to this podcast and then come to BizHacks Masterclasses, bizhack.ai. Starting next year, we're going to be doing a series of 8 masterclasses on the topic of AI and content. And really, it's going to focus on search marketing, SEO, PPC, the changing, search, generative search, and then, you know, the changing business of search and how to maximize it to create great content. So we're going to go through all aspects of search, both the technical SEO, PPC, you know, Google Ads, how to rank on organic search, and then the changing nature of search to include generative results embedded, you know, whether it's barred, barred on Google side or Bing on Microsoft/OpenAI side. It'll give you a really good primer and very specific, like at the end of each masterclass, we'll give you a specific assignment that is a low-hanging fruit, easy way for you to get started using AI for content. And, you know, then you have Alex's amazing tool, which we'll feature, by the way, during these masterclasses as an example of one of the hundreds of tools or even thousands of tools that are being built to do specific things using AI to make your life easier. And I think the real business opportunity, and I'll end here, if you're an entrepreneur, the business opportunity is to identify a narrow, narrow, narrow use case of something that is repetitive and important inside of a business. So find something that's repetitive and important inside of a business, then the nichier, the better, like the more specific and focused on niche, the better, and then build a tool to do that more efficiently. And I call this intelligent automation because it's a combination of old automation tools with new generative AI tools. And what generative AI really allows you to do is it turbocharges automation so that you can, if in the past you could maybe automate 20%, now you can automate 80%. So that's where the money is going to be made. That's why Alex has so many users of his app, because it's really solving a very specific problem for a very specific audience. And that's where the small business opportunity is, in my opinion.
Well, sound advice, great insights, Dan. Of course, always such a pleasure having you here on the podcast. And want to wish everyone a happy holiday season. We're going to be releasing this episode before the new year because we want to make sure people are prepared. So for our listeners, make sure you subscribe, you share, you check out BizHack, and happy new year. And Dan, we'll see you next year.
Yeah, I got one thing to say to your audience. This man, Alex Oliveira, is one of the most pure-hearted people I've ever seen. And those of you who are watching this on YouTube, there's like a heart. It looks like a piece of fine art, but there's a heart illustrated. And I think it's the perfect metaphor for who you are. You're so, you and I are like-hearted. You're so open-hearted, Alex. You're doing this for all the right reasons. I see you as a dad in the way that you raise your children. I admire you so much, and I hope I can be like you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan.